Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. The question of legal polygamous marriages is specific to the Muslim community of the Federation, but it's something that affects us all as members of Malaysia, or citizens of Malaysia. Now, a new study by Sisters in Islam has recently been published. And to help you understand the results of this study on polygamy, I have three wonderful people here joining. I have Sharina Sharif, who's Advocacy Legal Services and Research Manager at Sisters in Islam. Dr. Wan Zumushni, Wan Mustafa, who's a senior lecturer at UITM Negeri Sembilan, also a member of Sisters in Islam, and Dr. Sharifa Shahira, gender and politics analyst and a member of the National Council on Women's Organizations. Of course, also somebody who's been on the show before, right? And as a political analyst, thank you so much for coming back, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Big issue, polygamy, but I think in terms of what it represents, in terms of gender relations and the management of religious affairs and such. But how prevalent is it, Sharina? I mean, how many Muslim men in this country, Malay or otherwise, actually are in polygamous marriages?
Oh, thank you for having us today, Sharad, on this very important topic. So first of all, I think it needs to be said that the statistics are not, I wouldn't say they are complete. Firstly, because polygamy requires approval of the courts. And what we're finding is that a lot of men don't go for that court approval. They're conducting polygamy either illegally in Thailand, where they don't come and register it after, or they do it post-marriage. So we have figures of about 9,000, 8,000 in last year, about 9,000.
Nationally 9,000.
Yes, but then these 9,000 are the people who were persecuted as a result, prosecuted as a result of not registering. So this is a figure that was given by the government. In 2017, they gave a figure of about 8,000 people who were legally married in polygamous marriages.
But this sounds like a very small percentage, right?
Yes, yes. So that's why we think it's not, reflective of what's actually on the ground. From our statistics, in 2018, we had about 176 out of 400 odd of our clients. And then before that, the year before was 100, and the year before that was about 70. So you can see the rates are rising quite fast in relation to the practice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe I can draw Dr. Wan into this conversation at this point in time. You've been studying polygamous marriages for some time, I understand. Tell us what's happening. I mean, what is behind it? Is it that people think that this is a religious practice, that they want to emulate, a religious models? Or is it just personal preferences? What's really in this polygamous marriage setup?
Okay, when we embarked in the research, okay, it wasn't from looking at it from a religious perspective, but rather we studied the financial impact, emotional impact, and also how polygamy impacts the family social relationship, other than the legal impact as well. So we did a national survey with almost 1,500 respondents, consisting of children, wives, and also husband. So we include all this, and then we did an in-depth interview and also survey, not just survey, but also in-depth interviews.
Right. I want to ask you, does it come from a perception that there was a problem, that polygamous marriages represent a problem? Because I know that in the past, I mean, we're talking about really distant past, that, non-Muslim men also were in polygamous marriages, and that was outlawed some decades ago. What is it that drives this concern about polygamous marriage? Maybe I can ask Sharia this. I mean, where is this coming from?
The thing, that's why it's quite disturbing to say this is actually a religious practice. But if we look at the narrative and also the interpretation in even in Jakim and all those, Islam is actually limits marriage. It limits polygamy. It's like actually it's restrictive. It's discouraged, not something that you can just marry. Because it's even in Quran. The one that I heard from few Islamic scholars, they even say it is actually limits and be restrictive. Mm. And this is totally discouraged because most people can't be fair when you marry more than one.
Fair, correct? To so the man can't be fair to his Each wife.
Yeah, so polygamy not supposed to be a brand of Islam. You know, it's not Islamic brand. Mm. If you look from overall perspective, I have read few articles on in Africa, in even America, you know, and all the continents, around 33% permits polygamy. And it is not just a Muslim practice, it's actually more to a traditional and cultural practice.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a traditional practice. Yeah. What else, Sharina, this? I mean, okay, so the sisters in Islam in pursuing this, and this has been some an ongoing conversation for some time now, hasn't it?
Yes.
What is it that the perceptions are? Is the perception that this is, in fact, something to be done because it would be good religiously, or is it a cultural practice?
I think that is the area of concern, that there is a, you know, a rhetoric based on religion, that it is part of the, you know, obligations of a man, a good Muslim man, to be in polygamous relationships, which is totally false from the perspective of religion. I think one thing we need to remember, polygamy was pre-Islamic, it is cultural. Yeah. It was cultural across the whole of the Middle East, across the whole of the world. And then Islam came, and at that point in time, women, you know, a man would, could have up to 100 wives, a whole harem of women, right? Women couldn't own property, they couldn't have jobs, they didn't have education, and so their point of protection was men. And therefore, that was the community that they lived in. Islam came into the picture and limited it to four. So that is the progression that we see. And they all the surah that is in question that talks about polygamy also talks about, you know, if you're worried or if you're concerned that there cannot be justice done upon all your wives, then marry only one. And then it goes on to say, because the truth is that no man can actually be just to all his women equally in that sense. So the law also reflects that kind of justice that's required on all wives, except that it's not you know, translated into your day-to-day judgments and requirements as for polygamous marriages.
Okay, so we'll take a short break. We'll come back to the study itself and know more about what you've discovered. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Sharina, Shahira, and Dr. Wan. They're all members of Sisters in Islam, or in the case of Shahira, members of the NCWO. They're here to talk to me about polygamous marriages in Malaysia, a new study that's come out that reveals something that we did not know before. And I'm going to ask you, Dr. Wan, if you can help me understand what is it that this study reveals that we did not know before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, other than the financial impact, which is very obvious, because the resources is shared among more than one family, but also we also discover the impact, the emotional impact, and also the impact on family social relationship, how polygamous marriage has affected the children and also the wives, and then which will affect the well-being and also quality of life of the family. You know, the children might be doing well in school, but we don't know. I mean, like we see some emotional impact and psychological impact among the children.
Right. I do want to ask you about the question of resources. I would have assumed that the men who get into polygamous marriages and the women who agree to be part of it are richer. That the tendency is for rich men to get into polygamous marriage, or am I wrong?
What we find in our studies is that the wives have to get additional employment, or those who are not working have to start working, and the children also, they had, well, in the sense that they have to be independent, but there is a restrictive access to the resource.
Oh, so it's not true that it's just rich men who get into polygamy?
Necessarily, yeah. It is also caused poverty.
Then, I would like to highlight one of their findings, because I mean, I was involved in the discussion when they present, CIS present their finding. One of the most interesting finding that I will never forget is they say it's the men quality of life also, you know, decreasing, you know, whereby they find it is very challenging when they practice mm-hmm. polygamy, right?
Yeah.
So it shows that polygamy is actually burdening to everyone, is actually destructive to the family life, and especially in terms of subjective well-being, you know, for the husband and also the wives. And of course, the worst part is the children. So for me, for not restricting, you know, like what Insido observation concluding comment recently, you know, they criticized our Malaysian
practice
by amending the one of the act in 1984, whereby currently polygamy is less restrictive than before. So from the view of UN, from the view of CEDAW Committee, the Convention of Eliminating All Forms of,
discrimination against women. Mm-hmm.
Okay, for them, this is a regressive move. So, in order to have a better quality of family life, you know, you're supposed to actually restrict polygamy instead of making it less restrictive.
Okay, so there's a question of management here, but very interesting, some of the findings here that I have. 65% of first wives were unaware of their husband's marriage.
Yes.
44% of first wives started working longer hours. We were talking about this earlier. And also 45% of husbands did not submit applications to the court. So it's something that you'd mentioned earlier, Shireen, that in some ways, people are not complying with the laws. There are laws to manage this, but the men are not complying.
Yes.
And presumably the women not.
Yeah, just to explain the laws, I have to go back a few decades, actually. So we had one of the most progressive laws, Islamic family laws, in the world. And then we had two rounds of amendments, which literally reduced rights. And the particular area is the area of polygamy. So certain conditions were required, just and necessary. And referring to situations such as where they are infirm or unable to have children, the wife, you know, or unable to have conjugal relations. So there are specific situations referred to financial situation, requiring the man to maintain her standard of living. All this was changed and removed as a result.
Who did that? Who pushed that regression?
So state Islamic laws are at the state level. So, but in relation to the federal law, it was our parliament at that time that made those changes.
So the question, and I ask this because it seems to be very important to the larger question. You present all this information. Is there political will to bring us back to a point where we were in some ways a leading nation in terms of the rights of women and in terms of Islamic family law? I mean, who wanted this change, and who would resist going back to the past, a better past?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, we've seen the politicization of Islam over the years, over the decades, and I think this has had a real impact in terms of how men and women have their relations as well. So the area of Islamic family law is the area of marriage and children. And so that's what's been most impacted in terms of legislation. And it's been regressive in that sense. So we're hoping that Malaysia Baru brings about some changes.
Okay.
Still hoping.
We'll take a short break and we'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me I have Sharina Sharif, Sharifa Shahira, and Dr. Wanzu Mushni. They're all involved in this study on polygamy and polygamous marriages in Malaysia. You know, Sharina, you're making the point about this regression. Now, I want to ask you about the, and we can talk about the specifics of the study, but who are you directing this to? Who are you addressing this to? Are you want to bring it to government and asking government, yes, to make the change? Do you need to go to other stakeholders, religious authorities, or
so basically we're building a resource, you know, a good resources for policymakers to look at, because it's not just an issue of if they believe religion to be such, we have the religious argument. If they believe that women and men are, you know, in good relationships as a result of polygamy, we have the information. If they believe that children are well taken care of in polygamous relationships, we have the information, and all shows that it is not the case. So something must be done as a result. What we are proposing is that it is tightly controlled in countries like Tunisia, Turkey. It's completely banned. On the basis, they acknowledge that it is in the Quran, but on the basis that there is no fairness in such marriages, and that both the women and the children suffer some, you know, negative impact as a result of polygamous marriages.
Okay, I want to ask you, Dr. Wan, do you think that men, since they're an important stakeholder in this, would welcome a return to more protection and better management of this issue, or would they resist it? Because male privilege is something that men don't give up very easily, do they?
Yeah, they do. But and my concern as an educator is how we raise our boys, you know, and our children, so that if they want to make a decision when it comes to marriage is one of the important decisions that one make in life. So if a man decide to enter into a polygamous marriage, it must be on a valid reason and not just an escapism from what's going on in the first marriage. And marriage is hard work, and it takes it has to be an informed decision, even for single ladies. And I think we have to stop labeling, or even there should be more emotional and support system for single ladies or divorced women. If we want to support women, or we want to empower them, it's not by marrying them. We can still assist them, we can still give them aids, but not necessarily getting into a conjugal relationship.
I have 1 minute left, yes, and I'm giving it to you.
So I kind of like would like to highlight my study on social media intelligence. So I did a study on polygamous, what are the netizen perception, you know, and the sentiment are actually majority negative, all right, whereby they believe that polygamy is not what we call it practical for in Malaysian context, and they believe it's both men and women. I mean the profile of the respondent, all right, and most of them believe that polygamy is actually not it's more to patriarchal and it's not towards gender equality, and some of them make jokes, you know, saying that, you know, if we say, you know, we want to go for polygamy, I don't think it will come true. And then some even share their mothers, you know, their sisters' experience, yeah, and they are guys who shared, and they say that it is better to actually married one.
Okay, I'm running out of time. Wish you could have more time on this, and that obviously must give you hope that you'll have support in pushing this
generations
campaign. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much
again
for joining me. I've been speaking to Sharina Sharif from Sisters in Islam, Sharifa Shahira, as well as Dr. Wanzu Mushni from UITM Negeri Sembilan, all involved in a discussion about polygamy and polygamous marriages in Malaysia. This is Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro 1E.